Have you ever wondered what happens when childhood love collides with the devastating reality of mental illness? Releasing 10 by Chloe Walsh, the latest installment in her internationally acclaimed Boys of Tommen series, explores this question with raw authenticity. This heart-wrenching novel has become a cultural phenomenon, particularly among young adults struggling with mental health issues, with readers praising Walsh's unflinching portrayal of bipolar disorder. Taylor Swift reportedly recommended the series to her fans during her Eras tour, calling it devastatingly beautiful, while mental health advocates have applauded Walsh for bringing awareness to adolescent mental illness without romanticizing it. Set against the backdrop of rural Ireland, this story captures both the tender beauty of first love and the brutal reality of a mind at war with itself. Hugh Biggs and Lizzie Young's story begins in the early 1990s when they're just children in Ballylagan, County Cork. Lizzie, a peculiar child with selective mutism and early signs of mental illness, immediately captures Hugh with her snow-white hair and striking blue eyes. Their connection is instantaneous and profound. "You make me feel safe," Lizzie tells Hugh after he rescues her from drowning, a metaphor that will define their relationship for years to come. What makes their childhood bond so powerful is its foundation in complete acceptance. While others see Lizzie as strange or broken, Hugh sees only her brilliance and uniqueness. When Lizzie experiences her first psychiatric hospitalization at age 9, Hugh visits faithfully, researching her condition and promising, "You'll always be my lady, m'lady." Their childhood games of knights and ladies evolve into a real-life dynamic where Hugh becomes Lizzie's protector against the monsters that plague her mind. Their friendship deepens through shared secrets and rituals, carving their initials into melting tarmac, exploring hidden caves, and defending each other against bullies. In one particularly touching scene, Hugh stands up to his entire friend group to include Lizzie, declaring, "You're one of us now," and promising they'll keep each other's secrets and stick together no matter what. This vow becomes the cornerstone of their relationship, establishing a pattern where Hugh repeatedly chooses Lizzie over everyone else, even when that choice comes at great personal cost. The early chapters beautifully capture the innocence of childhood love, holding hands on the school bus, exchanging handmade Valentine's cards, and making grand declarations about future marriage. But beneath this sweetness lurks a darker reality, Lizzie's deteriorating mental health and the trauma she's experiencing at home, setting the stage for the heartbreak to come. One of the most disturbing elements of the story is the sexual abuse Lizzie suffers at the hands of Mark Allen, her older sister Kayomi's boyfriend. The abuse begins when Lizzie is just 5 years old, with Mark manipulating the vulnerable child by claiming she's sick like her mother and needs his special medicine to get better. These nighttime visits, which Lizzie initially believes are dreams or hallucinations, become entangled with her developing mental illness, creating confusion between reality and imagination. The psychological impact of this abuse permeates every aspect of Lizzie's life. She develops self-harming behaviors, dissociative episodes, and what doctors initially misdiagnose as early-onset schizophrenia before correctly identifying bipolar disorder. The trauma manifests in nightmares where she sees a scary lady and feels a monster in her room, visual and sensory hallucinations that blur the line between her mental illness and her actual abuse. Mark's predatory behavior extends beyond Lizzie. He sexually assaults his stepbrother Gibsy and emotionally manipulates Kayomi throughout their relationship. When Kayomi eventually discovers Mark's abuse of Lizzie, their confrontation leads to Kayomi's death, officially ruled a suicide, but heavily implied to be murder. This tragedy becomes the catalyst for Lizzie's most severe mental health crisis and creates a rift between her and Gibsy, whom she partially blames for her sister's death. The novel doesn't shy away from showing how sexual predators operate within families and communities. Mark cultivates an image as the charming, helpful boyfriend while systematically isolating and abusing his victims. When Lizzie finally speaks out at Kayomi's funeral, screaming, "He did it, Daddy! He killed Kayomi!" she's immediately discredited due to her mental illness. This painful reality reflects how predators often target vulnerable individuals precisely because they're less likely to be believed. Walsh's portrayal of bipolar disorder is unflinchingly realistic, showing both the external manifestations and internal experience of the condition. Through Lizzie's perspective, readers witness the terrifying sensation of losing control over one's own mind. During manic episodes, her thoughts race like a freight train barreling down the tracks. Colors appear more vibrant, and she feels invincible. In depressive phases, she describes feeling like I'm drowning and experiencing a heaviness that makes it impossible to move. The novel details the practical challenges of managing bipolar disorder, the constant medication adjustments, therapy appointments, and hospitalizations that become routine parts of Lizzie's life. Her father's frustration, "I can't do this again," and her mother's unwavering support, "Take your daughter home and love her," show the strain mental illness places on families. The stigma Lizzie faces is equally realistic, from classmates calling her crazy to police officers questioning her credibility because of her diagnosis. Particularly powerful is the depiction of hypersexuality during Lizzie's manic episodes. This symptom, often overlooked in discussions of bipolar disorder, becomes central to the plot when it leads to Lizzie's betrayal of Hugh. The novel presents this behavior not as a moral failing, but as a symptom of her illness. Yet, it doesn't absolve her of responsibility either, creating a nuanced exploration of agency and illness. Hugh's response to Lizzie's condition evolves throughout the story. Initially, he approaches her illness with childlike acceptance, simply holding her hand through panic attacks and promising to protect her from the scary lady. As they grow older, he becomes more proactive, researching bipolar disorder at the library, monitoring her medication, and recognizing early warning signs of episodes. His understanding deepens when he tells her, "I happen to adore that complicated mind of yours," showing his acceptance of her condition as part of who she is, not something separate from her identity. The novel masterfully chronicles Hugh and Lizzie's relationship as it transforms from childhood friendship to first romance, capturing the delicate transition with remarkable authenticity. Their meaningful first moment together in a secluded sea cave emerges as a watershed experience, described with genuine emotional depth. In that moment, everything changed, our friendship deepening into something neither of us fully understood, but both treasured completely. The setting becomes symbolic, with the cave representing their private world away from external pressures and expectations. As they navigate their evolving relationship, their different approaches reveal their core personalities. Hugh demonstrates thoughtful consideration, establishing clear boundaries, and emphasizing the importance of taking things slowly, reflecting both his protective nature and his understanding of Lizzie's health challenges. Lizzie faces more complex emotional terrain, balancing typical teenage feelings with the heightened emotions that accompany her manic episodes. Their careful navigation of boundaries becomes a central theme, with Hugh balancing his deep affection against his concern for Lizzie's well-being. The novel excels in its authentic portrayal of adolescent relationships, from quiet moments in the school library to important conversations behind the gymnasium. The challenging but necessary family discussions about relationships prove especially memorable. Hugh's conversation with his mother leads to his earnest declaration about personal values, a moment revealing both his maturity and youthful self-consciousness. Meanwhile, Lizzie's journey to understand her emotions during Manning episodes adds depth to their relationship, prompting both to develop greater emotional awareness than their peers. What distinguishes their connection is its foundation in deep emotional understanding. Their relationship builds on years of shared experiences, inside jokes about their third grade teacher, meaningful glances that speak volumes, and an intuitive ability to understand each other without words. During a particularly challenging period, when Lizzie questions why Hugh remains supportive through her health struggles, his response, "Because I love you and life's never boring with you," captures their profound connection. Their shared music playlist becomes symbolic of their relationship, a blend of light and serious songs reflecting their multifaceted bond. Their romance unfolds alongside their broader journey of self-discovery, weaving first love with personal growth. Through shared study sessions, weekend adventures, and moments of quiet understanding, they develop a relationship that transcends typical teenage romance, creating something both beautifully innocent and remarkably profound. The novel's rich supporting cast weaves a complex tapestry of relationships that illuminate Hugh and Lizzie's central story while exploring the multifaceted nature of love, loyalty, and generational trauma. Gibbsy, Gerard Gibson, emerges as Hugh's steadfast best friend and surrogate brother, their unshakable bond forged in the crucible of shared childhood tragedy. After witnessing his sister and father drown in a fishing accident when he was 9, Gibbsy found sanctuary in the Doyle household, where Hugh became the brother he desperately needed. This loyalty, tested repeatedly throughout their lives, remains unwavering, even when it creates impossible tensions with Lizzie, who harbors deep-seated resentment toward him for his perceived role in his stepbrother Mark's devastating actions. Claire, Hugh's irrepressible younger sister, provides both levity and emotional depth to the narrative. Her childhood declarations about marrying Gibbsy and having 10 babies evolve into comical discussions about choosing cat babies instead after a particularly traumatic sex education class. However, beneath her humorous exterior lies a perceptive young woman who forms a complex friendship with Lizzie. This relationship becomes a double-edged sword, offering Lizzie much-needed female companionship while simultaneously triggering waves of jealousy over Claire's lifelong intimacy with Gibbsy, a dynamic that forces Lizzie to confront her own unresolved trauma. The parents in the novel represent a spectrum of responses to crisis and grief. Lizzie's father, Michael, embodies the Irish tradition of emotional suppression, responding to his daughter's pain by threatening to send her to boarding school, a reaction born more from helplessness than cruelty. Her mother, Catherine, emerges as a pillar of quiet strength, maintaining her nurturing presence despite battling aggressive breast cancer, demonstrating that love can persist through the darkest circumstances. Hugh's mother, Sinead, becomes Lizzie's emotional anchor, offering the unconditional maternal love she craves with powerful declarations like, "I love you like a daughter, and I always will." Meanwhile, his father, Pete's descent into depression after witnessing a student's suicide, illustrates how trauma can hollow out even the strongest personalities, leaving him a ghost in this house, present physically but emotionally unreachable. The town of Ballylogan itself emerges as a vital character, its narrow streets and wide-reaching gossip network creating an inescapable backdrop to the story's events. The community's passionate rugby culture, where matches are treated like religious ceremonies and players achieve near-mythical status, shapes the male character's identities and relationships. Walsh masterfully incorporates authentic Irish elements, from colloquial expressions like "eejit" and "grand altogether," to deeply rooted folklore such as the Banshee of Ballylogan, whose wails supposedly predict death in the community. These cultural touchstones create a richly textured environment that both nurtures and constrains its inhabitants, influencing their choices, relationships, and attempts at healing. The novel's central conflict erupts when Lizzie, in the throes of a severe manic episode, sleeps with Hugh's rugby teammate Pierce during a party at Hugh's house. This betrayal, discovered when Hugh walks in on them, shatters not only their relationship, but the foundation of trust they'd spent years building. Hugh's immediate reaction, violently attacking Pierce and later vomiting from the emotional shock, reveals the visceral depth of his devastation. The scene is made more poignant by the fact that just hours earlier, Hugh had been planning to propose to Lizzie, the ring hidden in his dresser drawer. What makes this betrayal particularly complex is its inextricable connection to Lizzie's bipolar disorder. During her manic episode, she experiences hypersexuality as a symptom, making her more impulsive and sensation-seeking. Her medical records later reveal she had stopped taking her medication 3 weeks prior, believing herself cured. She later claims she thought Pierce was Hugh in her confused state, a statement that rings both true and hollow given the circumstances. The novel refuses easy answers about how much responsibility Lizzie bears for actions committed during a manic episode, forcing readers to grapple with questions of agency, illness, and accountability. Hugh's struggle with forgiveness forms the emotional core of the story's latter half. Despite understanding the role her illness played, he cannot separate the betrayal from his feelings for her. "I know you're sick, Liz. I get that, but it doesn't take away what you did." His internal conflict manifests physically: sleepless nights, loss of appetite, and panic attacks whenever he sees Pierce at rugby practice. He still loves her, but cannot trust her, creating an impossible situation where his heart wouldn't heal, even as Pierce's broken nose would. Their shared history, 5 years of supporting each other through college, career starts, and Lizzie's initial diagnosis, makes the betrayal cut even deeper. The aftermath shows both characters spiraling into their own forms of self-destruction. Hugh drowns his sorrows in alcohol, missing important work meetings, and making his friends promise they won't let me go back to her. His sister finds him passed out on his bathroom floor 3 nights in a row. Meanwhile, Lizzie spirals further into mania, engaging in increasingly risky behavior with Pierce while her medication sits untaken in her apartment. She maxes out credit cards, skips therapy sessions, and sends Hugh hundreds of increasingly incoherent text messages. Their attempts to reconnect only cause more pain, with Hugh admitting to his therapist, "I still loved her, and I still wanted to be with her, and I fucking hated myself for feeling that way." The novel forces readers to confront whether some betrayals, regardless of their circumstances, create wounds too deep to heal. The novel's final act focuses on both characters' journeys toward healing, separately rather than together. After her mother suffers a heart attack, Lizzie finally acknowledges she needs professional help. Her 3-month stay in a psychiatric hospital includes electroconvulsive therapy, medication adjustment, and intensive counseling. For perhaps the first time, she commits fully to treatment, not just for Hugh's sake, but for her own. "I don't want to hurt people anymore." Hugh's recovery takes a different path. He establishes a routine of school, work, swimming, and rugby, gradually rebuilding his life without Lizzie at its center. His tentative friendship with Katie, a music student who represents stability and normalcy, offers a stark contrast to his volatile relationship with Lizzie. Their cinema outings feel strangely calm compared to the constant drama he experienced with Lizzie. When Lizzie returns from treatment, their final conversation is both heartbreaking and necessary. Lizzie insists they cannot remain friends, knowing that continuing any relationship would be unhealthy for both of them. She takes the sideline bench in their friendship circle, allowing Hugh to move forward. Her parting words, "I'll always love you, Hugh Biggs, no matter what," acknowledge the permanence of their bond while accepting its end. This bittersweet conclusion avoids the romantic trope of mental illness being cured by love. Instead, it suggests that sometimes the healthiest choice for both parties is separation, even when love remains. Lizzie must focus on managing her condition and rebuilding her life, while Hugh needs to heal from the trauma of their relationship. The novel leaves open the possibility of reconnection in the future while honoring the reality that some breaks cannot and perhaps shouldn't be repaired. Throughout the novel, Walsh masterfully illustrates the vital importance of support systems for those struggling with mental illness. Hugh embodies this support for Lizzie with an extraordinary level of dedication, visiting her daily during hospitalizations, meticulously researching her condition, and literally holding her hand through countless panic attacks. His commitment manifests in small but significant ways, bringing her favorite books to the hospital, learning her triggers, and developing an intuitive understanding of when an episode might be approaching. When he promises, "If you slip again, I'll be there to pull you back. If you lose track of time, I'll be there to ground you," he demonstrates the kind of unwavering presence that can be life-saving for someone with mental illness. The novel delves deep into the complex dynamics of caregiving relationships. Through intimate scenes of daily life, we see Hugh adapting to Lizzie's needs, tracking her medication schedule, creating calm environments during manic episodes, and learning to recognize the subtle signs of approaching depression. However, the story also shows the limits of individual support. Despite Hugh's best efforts, he cannot fix Lizzie's bipolar disorder or prevent her from experiencing episodes. His eventual breakdown, I can't do this anymore, highlights the harsh reality of caregiver burnout and the critical need for professional intervention. The narrative explores how even the most devoted support person can become overwhelmed by the constant vigilance and emotional toll of caring for someone with severe mental illness. Walsh crafts a particularly poignant portrayal of how both characters evolve through their struggles. Hugh's journey from naive optimism to mature understanding shows in his learning to set healthy boundaries while maintaining compassion. We see him transition from trying to be Lizzie's everything to acknowledging his limitations and encouraging her to build a broader support network. Lizzie's development is equally compelling. She moves from passive recipient of care to active participant in her recovery, taking responsibility for her medication compliance, therapy appointments, and developing coping strategies. Their final interaction reveals two people who have matured through suffering, still deeply caring for each other, but wise enough to recognize when their relationship has become unsustainable. The novel weaves in broader perspectives through secondary characters, mental health professionals, support group members, and family who illustrate the importance of a comprehensive support system. Walsh's narrative ultimately delivers a nuanced message about mental illness. While love alone cannot cure bipolar disorder, compassionate understanding can make the journey less isolating. Through Hugh and Lizzie's story, readers gain profound insight into both the person experiencing mental illness and those who love them, creating a bridge of empathy across that often difficult divide. The story serves as a powerful reminder that recovery is rarely linear and that sustainable support requires both boundaries and professional assistance. Set against the backdrop of rural Ireland in the 1990s and early 2000s, the novel is deeply embedded in Irish culture and identity. Walsh incorporates authentic Irish slang, traditions, and cultural references that enrich the narrative and ground it in a specific time and place. From children playing hurling in muddy fields to teenagers attending FACE dance competitions in community halls, the Irish setting permeates every aspect of daily life. Local festivals like the Rose of Tralee and seasonal traditions such as the Harvest Fair create a vivid tapestry of rural Irish life that shapes the characters' experiences and worldviews. The novel's language reflects its setting with remarkable authenticity, with characters using distinctively Irish expressions that capture the rhythm and humor of everyday speech. Phrases like, the crack was 90, having a lot of fun, box the head off ya, I will punch you, and acting the maggot, misbehaving, pepper the dialogue. Walsh provides a comprehensive glossary of these terms, allowing non-Irish readers to appreciate the linguistic richness without interrupting the narrative flow. The characters' use of Hiberno English, that distinctive blend of English and Irish grammatical structures, adds further authenticity, with constructions like, I'm after doing it, for something recently completed. Religion permeates the community of Ballylagan, manifesting in both institutional and cultural forms. Catholic schools dominate education, with First Holy Communions, confirmations, and mandatory religious education forming crucial milestones in the characters' upbringing. The parish priest wields significant influence, and Sunday Mass serves as both a spiritual gathering and a social hub where community news spreads. This religious context adds complexity to contemporary issues like sexuality, mental illness, and social change as characters navigate between traditional Catholic teachings and their evolving personal beliefs and experiences. The novel's language weaves Irish history throughout its narrative, particularly through the physical presence of the past in local architecture and folklore. The hidden safe room in Taman College, where students in flying columns once hid during the War of Independence, serves as both a literal and metaphorical space where past and present intersect. Local monuments, street names, and family histories reference the struggles for independence, while older characters' stories of the Troubles add depth to the community's collective memory. These historical elements connect the characters to a larger national narrative of resistance and resilience, subtly paralleling Lizzie's own struggle against the forces that threaten to overwhelm her. Through this richly detailed Irish setting, Walsh creates a story that feels universally human while remaining culturally specific, a tale of love, mental illness, and coming of age that could only unfold in exactly this way in the fields and villages of County Cork. The author's attention to seasonal changes, local customs, and the shifting dynamics between tradition and modernity creates an immersive experience that brings rural Ireland vividly to life.